Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the December 16th meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. I wondered if you would please stand with me while we pledge allegiance to the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. If you have any electronic devices, please silence them. Point out our exits are to my right in the back and to my left in the front. If there's a fire, please don't use the elevator. We'll have the roll call of members, please.
Mr. Shinagawa? Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis? Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
13 members present.
We have a quorum. Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
We will be having an executive session to discuss pending litigation. I don't think we have any other issues in the executive session, do we, John or Joe?
No.
Before we start, privilege of the floor. I'd like to move something up on the agenda, and that's a little later. We were going to hear from our county clerk, Aurora Valenti, and I wondered if she might come up to the podium for us.
Aurora, Aurora, Aurora.
After 20
Hello,
years,
everybody.
I'm sorry to say that we're going to be having a retired county clerk in Aurora Valenti. We'll be having a new clerk, and that will be nice, but she's done a lot for our county over the years. She asked for a few minutes on our agenda, and Aurora, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Michael. I had to put on paper a few things I was going to say, otherwise I'd be speaking all night. And I needed a tablet or something stiff enough to put the speech on. So I... as of January 1, this will be my license plate, 11X1. I got to stay first at something. Okay, everyone, I just wanted to say thank you with a few words. My name is Aurora Rubens Valenti. I was born in Ithaca, New York at lived at 510 North Plain Street, within walking distance of Immaculate Conception School and Immaculate Conception Church. Those were very important reasons to live on North Plain Street. I started kindergarten at the age of 4, probably because my mother was anxious to get me out of the house. But Immaculate Conception's kindergarten, that was the first kindergarten they ever had. I graduated from Ithaca High School in 1953 at the age of 16, and so it went. Enough history, okay? I came here tonight to thank you, the representatives of Tompkins County, and the residents of Tompkins County who made it possible for me to become Tompkins County Clerk on January 1, 1991, 24 years ago. I want to thank you for permitting me to serve as your county clerk, as your clerk of the courts, and as director of the Department of Motor Vehicles. Congratulations to all of us for being residents of Tompkins County, as well as employees and representatives thereof. I know my parents are proud that they became citizens of the United States in that very courthouse where I held my 72 ceremonies and permitting their daughter to be first-generation American. Aurora Rubens Valenti ran for office and won. And thanks you, the people of Tompkins County. Tompkins County is a wonderful employer, the best employer on earth. Well, maybe next to Disney World, but God bless us, everyone. Ciao and arrivederci. See you.
Aurora, one thing, we've contacted Cher for the lead role in your life story, so.
That was very nice. Aurora, thank you for coming, and thank you for the nice words, and we feel ditto about you. We'll turn next to a privilege of the floor for the public. This is the opportunity for anyone to come and speak to us for up to 3 minutes. We ask if you do that you agree to the rules that we have and that you sign a blue card. If anyone hasn't signed them, one and wants to speak, please do that. The rules for speaking are as follows. You're saying, I agree to a 3-minute time limit. I agree not to raise my voice. I agree not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of peace. I agree not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, I agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. I agree that if I cause a disruption and am asked to leave, I will leave the chambers. We do have a clock on the screen on the wall at the front of the room, which will count down the time, and at the end of 3 minutes, there will be an audible soft alarm, and we would ask if you're still speaking at that point to please conclude. I have, as I said, two cards. I have one from Jim Law. And, Jim, if you could come forward and to one of the microphones. It's J.M. Law. Excuse me. I'm sorry. It's not Jim. My apologies. And excuse me. And please state your municipality.
I'm Jane Marie Law from the town of Ithaca. I live on Muriel Street and have lived here for 26 years. I'm here tonight as an Airbnb host. I've been an Airbnb host since 2013. And I'm a few years from entering phased retirement at Cornell, and my husband is as well. And we're thinking, as we're putting three kids simultaneously through expensive colleges, how we're going to make this all work and manage to stay in Ithaca. I pay my state taxes on my Airbnb income, my local 3% taxes. I claim my income on a 1099 given to me by Airbnb, and I file a Schedule C business report with that. And I didn't bring my glasses, and I wrote notes, so I'm actually having to do this off my head, and I'm a little nervous. I apologize. In November, I went to the Airbnb International Open Convention in San Francisco, and there I met with Airbnb hosts and traditional bed and breakfast hosts from around the world, including Barcelona, Brazil, San Francisco, Portland, Chicago, New York, and places in the south of the United States, Atlanta, Louisiana. And it was a really wonderful experience. And there I made contact with Airbnb's Government Relations Bureau and actually talked to them about what we were trying to do in Ithaca, New York. And a group of friends and I, who are all Airbnb hosts in Ithaca, feel really strongly that regulating Airbnb is really important. And the things that we want to see regulated is we feel that it's important for everybody to pay the 3% tax and their state sales tax if that's what's required of lodging establishments in this city. We feel that tax fairness is important, and I like Oliver Wendell Holmes' line where he says, I like paying my taxes. With them, I buy civilization. And we feel that that's kind of our mantra. So we have gotten together to get other Airbnb hosts to pay their taxes. We feel that Airbnb can be regulated in a number of ways that really promote the justice in this town. And one of them is we feel it's important to pay attention to affordable housing in Ithaca and make sure that Airbnb does not become a force against that. But we do feel, however, that if you're paying your taxes and you're not taking good properties off the market for affordable housing, that Airbnb is actually a wonderful goose that can lay a golden egg for Ithaca. It's great for tourism. I've hosted 43 guests. They're from all over the world. They tend to be people who really tend to travel only with Airbnb. They are looking for experience tourism, not luxury tourism or hotel tourism. It's a special niche market. And I would support the spirit of this resolution. I'm not sure that the way it's written is necessarily the best way to go, but I want to speak and say that as an Airbnb host who's helping other Airbnb hosts in Ithaca, we're very strongly in favor of regulation, and so are the people from the Airbnb government relations. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. The next one I have is Sherry Corthus.
That's me.
And if there's anyone else, please sign a card and send it up.
Okay. Hi, I'm Sherry Corthus, 502 North Albany, and you guys will probably remember me from speaking out about the jail expansion, and it got approved. But since June, I want to thank you for funding the OAR position, because since June, I've been volunteering at OAR doing message relay, and I've really learned a lot during that process, and we really, really appreciate that position because they truly needed it. And that's where I think we're doing so good in the here in the county. But OAR is not the only solution. Our jail population, after I've volunteered there now since the summer, most of these people are in there for heroin, meth, crack, it's drugs. It's most of them are drug related. You have your one or two criminals in there, but not for a 7-bed expansion. I know this has already been done, but and we had also requested some reports from the county jail, and I have some examples of one that I'd like to see if you guys would. I brought 4 copies, and if you on the back, it's just scientific stuff. It's recycled paper, so it's the front, and you can see the report that they get in Missouri from their Boone County, and it tells you the inmates' book, how many they let, and it's a very great report. I wish we could have one here at the lead county level. So tomorrow night I'll speak at Common Council about the police issue. But I just want to say that I was in New York City over the weekend for that march, and it was a very powerful moment because there was a lot of love and there's a lot of anger because there's a lot of things going on in our country right now that it's a lot. And there's a lot of people that are, it's sad. What's happening is not right now, and it has to stop. And I think at Tompkins County and at the city level, we have to, again, start coming together as people and starting to support one another, because that's the only way we're going to make it through what we have ahead. And I think putting people in jail for minor offenses and drugs, and it just doesn't solve the problem because they're in cages. And the reason, they have message relay is because to get a telephone card, this is, $25 telephone card is $5 to CVS to get the money put on it, and then $7 to Green Dot. So your $25 card becomes $37. And so that's throughout the whole system that goes down to, everything. There's money at the commissary made. There's money made when the Cornell College students get bailed out and they hire an attorney. And then, it's just a big money-making system. It'd be nice if we could do a restorative justice program, a rehabilitation center, Tompkins County Library, I think might be a great place for that. But thank you for your time, and I appreciate it.
Thank you. I don't see any municipal official for privilege of the floor. Before we go to legislator privilege of the floor, I know we have several department heads waiting for one resolution. I'd really like to do that for them. And as soon as Jim Dennis gets back to his seat, Jim, could you move resolution R, please?
Sure. I'll move resolution R, which is authorization to amend the capital program, appropriate rollover funds and revenue for the purchase and implementation of an electronic health record practice management system - Public Health Department and Mental Health Department. And I would move that.
Seconded by Kathy Luz Herrera. Would you like to speak to it?
My comment is that we, the Budget Committee less than 15 minutes ago moved this forward to the legislature. People from the department are here, and Greg, if anyone has any questions on what is actually happening in this whole process, we learned very quickly that it seems to be a very good way to go. It will make us more efficient and serve the purpose of, that they're trying to accomplish over there. So if anyone has questions, they're here to answer.
Anyone else like to speak to this one? Kathy?
I'll just briefly say some of what we discussed at Health and Human Services is the fact that this is not only a state, how can I say this, the state really needs us to keep the records in the ways that they want us to, and the software that we've got right now isn't going to be useful. But we're also saving money by combining the use of this program, the electronic health record practice management system, between the two departments, and as near as I can tell, it's a really good endeavor, and there's been a lot of work put into it on the part of the IT department, Greg Potter, and the health department and the mental health department, and I think it's the way to go and would appreciate everybody's support.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. Billy Kiefer.
I have a question. I'm looking at the resolved on lines 39 through 41.
Packet page
28, which refers to utilization of the New York State Office of General Service background contract, and I'm wondering what that is.
Jim, or some one of the...
You want to do that, or Joe?
Greg Potter,
either one.
Who's going to speak? Greg? Director of Information Technology.
Part of this project includes software implementation, but part of it...
Use the microphone, please, Greg.
Some hardware. So we may be implementing new tablets as part of the project, which are done wirelessly through... So the proper way to purchase those is through New York State aggregate purchase.
State contract for hardware?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Anything else? Ready to vote? This is a short-form roll call. It's an amendment of the capital plan, so it will require 10 votes. Short-form roll call, please.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Are there any no's? That's unanimous. Thanks, everybody, for being here.
Yeah, thank you all for coming, and happy holidays.
Let's move to privilege of the floor for legislators. Anyone want to speak tonight? Martha Robertson.
Yes, a meeting tomorrow night is happening, and I hope people are in the neighborhood of Ellis Hollow are paying attention to the sign that the Highway Department put up today. It's a really, really big sign. They have to see it. So a public meeting with facilities and Highway 2 to discuss the reconstruction of the next section of the Ellis Hollow Road. Meeting is at 6 o'clock, 6 to, I guess, 8 o'clock at the Ellis Hollow Community Center on Janung Road. So just encourage people to interrupt what else they might be doing for the holidays and stop in for that meeting.
Anyone else? Carol Chalk.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that people know, first of all, that the Black Oak folks have a commitment from Cornell, I think, has this been said here, to purchase 100% of their wind energy that they'll be generating for a certain number of years, which enables them to really move forward. And there's an opportunity this Thursday night. One of their models is to become the New York State's first community-owned wind project. So it enables people with an investment level. I mean, you can't have nothing. It's a minimum investment, I think, is about $7,000. And there's going to be a session this Thursday night from 7:30 to 9 at La Terrelle if you're interested in learning what it takes about more about being able to become an investor. They will have a session there. You have to have some money in the bank, funds or money in the bank, but it's not undoable for somebody who's at a later stage of or mid or later stage of their career to have what it takes to become an investor. If you've always wanted to invest in wind, or if your house wasn't suitable for those the solar Tompkins sun panels, it's an opportunity to invest in renewable energy.
Kathy Luz Herrera.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Another community meeting I wanted to tell you all about for people that are interested in what's going to happen to the old PNC on Hancock Street. Ithaca Neighborhood Housing, as most of you all know, is, I don't know if you were going to announce this, a lot of times you do, Will, but they're going to set up four public meetings. Well, they've already had one, and there's a website where you can look at the proposals. The architects are going to come up with they have prepared three different concepts for the site, and what they're looking for at this point is comments on what goes where, how to engage the creek edge, et cetera. This is a really beautiful site, and it's great that the public is going to have some say about how it goes. The meeting is tomorrow night, Wednesday night, and that's December 17th. It is a community open house at the old store, the PNC store on Hancock. I'll tell you the address, 210 Hancock Street. It's come when you can. You can just drop in and view the materials, talk to Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Service and the designers, and comment. You don't have to be there, though, to do this. There's a website, 210Hancock.org, where the materials for all the meetings will be posted, as well as a place for community input. And the community input from the first meeting is already there for all to see. So anybody that's got opinions on how this should be done or thoughts, come by the open house tomorrow if you can, or check out the website. There'll be two additional meetings that we'll be talking about, but this is an exciting time for that project and that parcel. So it's the old location of the Neighborhood Pride store and known as the PNC also. So it's in Northside. Everybody knows, right? All right. Hope to see you there, but some of us are going to be at the Ellis Hollow Road thing, so I might not see you there.
Anyone else? Billy Kiefer.
I have two things. I was reading some of the New York State level information we get. I think it was from the Attorney General, but it might have been another one of those mailings we get, which said that Essex County on December 1st passed a law that is based on a change in state finance law that allows the county to look at additional factors rather than just one size fits all, what's the cheapest bid, when you are thinking about awarding contracts. There are other items that you can consider and not be found wanting. So I would hope that our county might look into that and see if we can more broadly spell out what we want to consider when we award contracts. The other thing that I wanted to mark is the passing of a hero of mine, Theo Colburn. She died yesterday at 87. In the 1970s, when she was in her mid-50s, she'd been a pharmacist. She retired. She got divorced, and she went back to school. She went out west and worked at the Rocky Mountain Biological Station in Colorado. And then she went to the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and she got a Ph.D. in zoology with minors in epidemiology, toxicology, and water chemistry. She worked in Washington for a while. She worked for the World Wildlife Fund and the Conservation Foundation. But she also decided that with her background, she was interested not in seeing what water pollutants would cause cancer, which was the big thing that everybody was worrying about, But she wanted to know what all the myriad chemicals that have been introduced into our environment over the years did to other creatures affected by water pollution. And so when we just recently have had movement to take BPA out of baby bottles, that's based on her early work. We all have heard of Sandra Steingraber, who is local now and does similar work. She was one of the pioneers, and it's a great loss, but she's been a wonderful role model.
Thanks, Dula. Anyone else? Peter Stein. I'm sorry, I had Leslin first. Excuse me, Peter.
Mr. Chair, I just want to take the opportunity to offer some shameless self-promotion, but it's also relevant. Our Civil War Commission.
You won't be the first.
Our Civil War Commission has been doing a marvelous job of education and history and bringing information to our community. And this weekend, one of the things that our Civil War Commission is supporting is a local play called A Civil War Christmas, written by it's a Pulitzer Prize-winning play written by Paula Vogel. It will be performed Friday night and Saturday night at 7 p.m. at the First Baptist Church, and I have no idea where I'm pointing. It's somewhere in this parking lot. The First Baptist Church, and it's also there's also a 3 o'clock matinee on Saturday. And the shameless self-promotion part of it is that I'm in it. I get to play a very historical, notable figure, Elizabeth Keckley, who was the seamstress of First Lady and confidant of First Lady Mary Booth Lincoln. Elizabeth Keckley, unfortunately, although she was the seamstress for all of the Washington socialites, died impoverished. She also had written a tell-all book that broke her relationship with Mrs. Lincoln about things that were happening in the White House between the president, Mr. Lincoln, and Mrs. Lincoln. So if you want to add one other thing to your agenda this weekend, feel free to come. It's free because it is sponsored by the Civil War Commission. It is free and open to the public, a very large cast of wonderful community performers. I think there's 16 people total. So come check it out. I wanted to share that.
Leslin, would you recite those times again, please?
7 p.m. Friday night, this Friday, the 19th, and Saturday the 20th, both 7 p.m., and also a Saturday matinee, 3 p.m., at the First Baptist Church here in DeWitt Park.
Can't think of a nicer thing to do on a Saturday or Sunday or Friday. How's that? Peter Stein. Peter's been recovering from a case of laryngitis, so if he's a little soft tonight, that's the reason.
Okay, I hope I get through this. About a week or so ago, a week and a half ago, I went to the opening of a TC3's new restaurant called, a strange word, cultivare, which means cultivate in Italian. And it's in the old wine center on Cuba Street, between just beyond Green Street. It was their opening night. And the place was just packed with people. There must have been 250 people in there, I would guess. It's a beautiful-looking restaurant, nicest-looking restaurant in Ithaca, with a nice long bar and people playing music there and so forth. And this is a project of TC3. Sounded a little bit nuts when I heard about it the first time, but they sold me on it. And it is to teach culinary arts to their students to be able to prepare food that is the food of the future, healthy, local, well-cooked and well-tasting. And I was really enthusiastic about it. I think it's open now. They don't serve breakfast. They serve lunch and dinner. And it reminded me when I came here, when I went there, that I don't know how long ago, 55 years when I first came to Ithaca as a postdoc at Cornell, the Statler Club had a similar operation. And it's an interesting story about how things change. But the Statler Club at that time, one of their, the school of the Statler School, a hotel school, one of the things that they taught students was how to cook for a restaurant and how to run a hotel. And they used this restaurant called the Statler Club as both as a way for providing faculty and staff with a place to meet and eat and greet, and also to be able to train their students how to cook. And it was wonderful. It was inexpensive. Excellent food would change every night. And I thought it would go on forever, but indeed it didn't. It died after about 25 years, much to my dismay. And it's interesting how it died and TC3 is taking it up. But the big difference was that back then, 50 years ago, you taught people, Cornell University considered it a good thing to do to teach people how to cook. And now there's still a hotel school, but they don't teach people how to cook anymore. They teach people how to finance. Everything is finance. And so the need to train, to teach students how to cook passed because at the upper levels of education, you don't do that anymore. You just teach them how to finance something. So that job has been taken over by TC3, and we'll have a new generation of cooks, hopefully as good as the ones that Cornell produced, to increase the quality of the food that we eat in Ithaca.
They'll be better.
I would hope so.
Anyone else? I'd like to use my chance at privilege of floor to stop and remember two people who passed away. Dooley mentioned someone in the community, but we've had two that had significant contact with this legislature when it was the Board of Representatives. And one of those is Phyllis Howell, who was the clerk of the Board of Supervisors, and then, once we became a Board of Representatives, was also the clerk. Did you take over right from her? So the last previous to Kathy Covert. And I did not happen to serve when she was on the board, but she was legendary. She committed herself for 25 years to the people of Tompkins County, and she has recently passed away, and I'm sorry for that. Someone else who served on the legislature, on the Board of Representatives at that time, was John Marcham. John Marcham continued to be interested in this community long after he went off the Board of Representatives. He did things like work with the city of Ithaca on its charter commission. He was interested in the TV cable commission, both at the city level and also at the intermunicipal level. He gave us a lot of good advice. He was interested in redistricting most recently and came to the redistricting meetings of the independent committee and made suggestions to them at that time. John was an editor of the Cornell Alumni News for, I think, 30 years, it says in his obituary. He wrote for the Ithaca Journal. He wrote for other publications around the country. And he volunteered for the History Center, edited books for them, wrote books and things. He's a really remarkable person. His dad was the mayor of Cougar Heights for 25 years, so there was a real commitment to Ithaca. I wondered if we could just take and have a minute of silence for both of these individuals because they meant so much to our community. Thank you.
Yes.
know what that sound is?
It's the air handler.
I think it's in the ventilation system.
It's the fan on the air handler.
We're stuck with it. What?
It could be a permanent part of our environment. We're aware of it.
Many
it's
of us.
Worse. It's been a kind of a constant presence. I think it's gotten louder or something.
Okay, so it's not just me. And all right, I thought maybe Jim could do something about it, but all right, thank you.
We have a special topical presentation tonight by Tom Knipe from our planning department, and he's going to talk to us about the Airbnb issue. And take us, we'll suspend long enough to put this. You need the screens? Put the screens down.
Tom, do you need the screens?
Yeah. I do need the screens.
You'll get them. When you're ready.
I'm going to ask for some technical assistance.
Uh-oh. We let our director of IT go already. There, we're getting some lights.
There we go. Hey, I like that. Well, thank you. Tonight I've been asked to give you some information about the growth of Airbnb and online rental platforms, its local impact, and what the county is doing. A year ago, the Ithaca-Tompkins County Convention and Visitors Bureau first began looking into the Airbnb impact in the county and reported at that time that it was performing similar to a 50-room hotel, mostly unregulated. And if you're not familiar, Airbnb is a powerful, mobile-friendly booking site for guests to book rooms directly with private hosts who rent out a room in their home or their entire home for short-term stays. It was founded in 2008, grown to about 25 million guests, 800,000 listings in 34,000 cities. Big new player in the lodging industry. Airbnb is not the only online booking platform. Definitely the largest and most successful. For example, locally, there's about 240 Airbnb listings compared to about 50 on VRBO and about 10 on Flipkey. Those are a couple of other platforms. Traditional B&Bs use the platforms, but Airbnb is also driving a new type of short-term accommodation in the lodging market where people share a house or a room. So this is a real change that's emerged as part of growth in the so-called sharing economy in just the past two or three years here locally. The Airbnb platform has a $10 billion valuation and is rumored to be preparing for an IPO. Again, searching the Ithaca area, there are about 240 rooms listed countywide. It's variable. Some are only available for limited periods. And some hosts are also responsible for more than one listing. We estimate about 170 local hosts. And within that, probably 75 really active listings, so folks looking for daily or weekly business. This number of active hosts doesn't appear to have grown significantly in the last year since we first started looking at this, but prices and number of bookings do appear to have increased. Revenue's probably increased about 20% in the last year, according to the CVB's analysis. And interestingly, Airbnb seems to be particularly popular here compared to the rest of the region. Onondaga, Syracuse has about 89 Airbnb rooms. Monroe, Rochester, 113, and we've got more than twice that. As savvy local folks. So it's what's the impact? You know, it's difficult to gather information about hosts and bookings through the site, so we really can't be certain at this point about the specific economic impact, but the CVB has conservatively estimated that annual activity through the Airbnb site in Tompkins County accounts for at least 10,000 room nights and more than $1 million in gross revenues. Associated spending other than lodging from Airbnb guests is not included in their analysis, but it could be, an additional $2 million or more spent on local restaurants, shopping, since lodging typically accounts for about a third of spending by visitors staying in paid lodging other than hotels. We get that from our Chimura study. Airbnb hosts and proponents point to benefits such as expanded lodging choice for visitors, added dollars to hosts and local businesses. And in some ways, this really is a new, unique product that may not otherwise be available. Still, traditional B&B operators have voiced concerns and brought them to the county and asked the county to act to ensure a level playing field. In addition to benefits, the growth of Airbnb-style short-term lodging platforms brings potential challenges, especially around code and tax compliance. In general, some Airbnb hosts are in compliance with local laws, and some aren't. Again, the site does not make it easy for local governments to really know. Airbnb hosts may be subject to additional zoning and building codes, which are enforced, of course, by City of Ithaca, local towns and villages. In some communities, there have also been concerns about the impact of Airbnb on housing affordability. If a rental property becomes unavailable because it's now being operated as an Airbnb, full-time, that will be likely to exacerbate the county's low vacancy rates. And there's also, concerns about liability for hosts, some have voiced. So in terms of room tax compliance, right now a few dozen Airbnb hosts have registered with the county. County Finance is working on this, and I think it's expecting more to come in soon, but we clearly have some room for improvement in terms of compliance with the hotel room occupancy tax law. Also, uncollected room tax revenues could have a negative impact on the Tompkins County Tourism Program. We have a successful tourism program, attracts and serves over 900,000 visitors a year. Tourism generated $174 million in local spending in 2012 and 3,400 local jobs. And as you know, room tax revenues this year expected to be about $2.25 million, with those funds going to support local arts and culture groups, museums, festivals, community celebrations, beautification projects, hospitality workforce development, along with our Convention and Visitors Bureau marketing, sales, and visitor services, and a variety of other tourism development projects. So what has the county done? Last week, I had an opportunity to meet with a group of representatives of the STPB, the Innkeepers Association, CVB, Chamber of Commerce, Bed and Breakfast Association of Greater Ithaca, and a group of organized Airbnb hosts. And there is broad agreement that Airbnb hosts should pay into the tourism program in Tompkins County through the room tax. And Airbnb also itself requires this of its hosts. What are we doing to support that? In terms of information, it's now easy. This is a picture of the county finance department website. Easy to find out about the room tax law, to pull off a fillable PDF, fill it out, and send it in. And basically, anybody who provides short-term lodging on a regular basis needs to collect room tax. In terms of direct outreach, we've compiled a list of addresses of Airbnb hosts who appear to not be currently registered as lodging operators with the county, and the Department of Finance will be sending a mailing this week, just simply letting folks know what the room tax law requires, how to register, as well as some of the benefits of registering. And just in the last several days, in advance of this resolution coming forward, I've also spoken with a government affairs representative from Airbnb who's offered to come to Ithaca and explore options for working together on compliance and regulatory issues. So this is a promising development. In terms of education, we've been in communication with the Airbnb group and the innkeepers group. There are actually two workshops being hosted by the Airbnb group this week, and so those are promising developments. In terms of strict enforcement, we're still taking a soft approach, but if needed, the county does have powers in the room tax law to support enforcement. Should there be additional local regulation? If this were to be pursued, it would clearly need to be in direct collaboration with municipal governments in the county. Other communities are beginning to successfully regulate Airbnb, usually in cooperation with Airbnb. The company's been supportive of regulation, which allows the activity to occur and clarifies the standards and rules. So we've heard of San Francisco, Portland, New York City, Madison, San Jose. Communities which are explicitly regulating this Airbnb activity tend to seek a local definition for the point of inflection between amateur and professional Airbnbs. Those who are operating Airbnbs out of their own home, in a room in their home, or through the whole house rental when they're not occupying the house, versus those that are operating professional businesses and where the home is unavailable for other uses most of the time. At the state level, the New York State Hospitality and Travel Association has indicated that they are making this part of their legislative platform in advocacy to the state next year. I'm sure that the county will evaluate their proposals. This resolution before you today really simply asks the NYSAC and the state government to also study the issue in depth with an eye towards upstate impacts and consider up actions to support counties and local governments in their efforts to enforce existing laws. And that's my presentation.
Thank you, Tom. Do we have questions for Tom? I see Peter Stein first, then Martha Robertson.
I've heard a fair amount of people that are concerned about taxes that aren't being paid, but what about the safety aspects? I have no idea what kind of control there is of hotels and rooming houses or something like that. So are there rules about that, and are they enforced for Airbnb, and are people concerned about them not if they're not being enforced?
One of the challenges we have in New York State in terms of regulation is that the enforcement of the building codes and their different zoning regulations in the different municipalities is the different approaches at the local level. The county's role, in my understanding, kicks in when we meet the definition in the state health code of a temporary lodging facility, which is 12 or more rooms. So typically the county's role is limited, and that's the purview of municipalities here. Have I heard concerns about it? Not me personally, but there may be those concerns about safety.
Martha?
Thank you. Thank you, Tom, for this this very interesting presentation. You said, could you go back to the first slide? I think it was the first. The number of rooms. Okay, well, go to that one. No, the number of rooms. I'm sorry, the number of rooms, 10,000 room nights, you said?
Yes.
Okay. So if those room nights were, say, charged the average amount for a room as, say, a B&B, and then you looked at the tax, and sales tax is relevant as well, right?
Right.
Not just the tourism tax. So is that where you got the $1 million of revenue that's not coming?
Those would be gross sales.
That's the gross sales. Okay.
A low estimate of gross sales associated with Airbnb rentals in Tompkins County.
Okay. So then the revenue. And are we talking about sales tax as well whenever we talk about the tax? Not just about.
I haven't done a lot of talking about sales tax, but certainly that conversation should be had and would apply. And the County Finance Department website refers people to New York State Department of Finance for interpretation of sales tax. There's some confusion about in New York State what the bungalow law is and what that means for certain people and how to get around it. The local organized local Airbnb hosts seem to be saying that sales tax absolutely applies and should also be paid. One of the things that local governments have been successful at regulating this activity have done is work to incorporate the collection and then payment to local governments of all applicable taxes on behalf of their hosts. That may be a challenge in New York State. I'm not familiar enough with the New York State law to really know.
Okay, thank you.
Carol?
Yeah, Tom, what's the, you know, we've been building a lot of hotel rooms here. What's the status of our hotel room availability on summer weekends, week and fall and spring weekends especially?
Yeah, I don't have the specific occupancy figures right in front of me, but it's fair to say that we have a very high occupancy rate as well as high average daily rates, especially during those peak times.
And what do you mean by a high daily rate?
High compared to comparable markets, compared to New York State, compared to the U.S. We have a very robust local lodging market.
Yeah, okay. And that was my other question, is how that compares to the rest of upstate New York.
It's stronger than upstate. Saratoga is a comparable market to us here.
Jim?
I believe Bruce presented your committee with all those numbers within the last 6 weeks. So those kind of numbers are pretty available to us.
Leslie?
So I have probably the simplest question ever. What is an Airbnb? What is that? And what is it that I get or don't get that I would get or don't get at a regular B&B? Somebody help me out.
I think it's a great question because Airbnb, it's I'm going to stay at an Airbnb. It has become that sort of noun in the common lingo. But the reality is it's just an online booking platform, but it's a really smart one that's changing the business.
So it's a booking platform that I am going to stay. People register with this booking platform. Jay Mary Friends, you can help me out here.
I'd be happy to explain this with honey if it's done
a walk. All right. Okay. I'm going to take you up on that.
Certainly. Why don't you step to the microphone?
She'll do a better job than me.
I'm sure I'm not the only person who has that question.
Step to the microphone, please.
Thank you.
It could be everything. What you sign up to rent.
What you get. You could get a camper in someone's yard, if that's legal and what's on their platform, or you can get a castle. My friends are renting a castle in Ireland this weekend. It's an entire castle that comes with servants and a cook and everything, and they're getting that through Airbnb. And my son stayed in a hogan on the Navajo reservation through Airbnb. All of those are, Airbnb doesn't own them. The local person lists them. Airbnb takes 3% from the host and 7% from the guest. Where do they get that $10 billion? The guest pays Airbnb the minute they book. The host is paid when the guest arrives. And so they might keep that money for a while. And if you're talking about derivatives trading, you're talking about a lot of money being made on the derivatives market. But what's important about that is that the host and the guest actually have no financial transaction. So when a guest comes to my home, my job is to treat them the way I would treat a guest in my home. And people like that. That's what people are paying for. My son stayed in a hogan, had a woman who didn't speak English taking care of him, spoke only Navajo, and she treated him the way a Navajo woman would treat a guest. And he never had to pull out his wallet and say, "And how much do I owe you?" So that's part of what the platform is designed to do. And most of the guests in Airbnb are just normal people renting a room in their house. I want one point of, a very important point of correction, if I may, please. I apologize for taking the microphone. There, Tompkins County shows that only about 24 Airbnb hosts have signed up to pay the taxes. Those are only the Airbnb hosts who intentionally on their application identified themselves as Airbnb hosts. I did not, and 90 other people that I know also did not. So at least 110 of us are signed up. And my number of those registrations is 315. So, and I know someone who has number 4, who's also an Airbnb host. So, unless you're doing funny math with the numbers, I'm at 315, and somebody else was number 327. So, I know there's at least 327 certificates of registration. Most of us are identifying ourselves as just hosts and guests with guests.
Thank you for that explanation.
So if I can just have one moment of clarification. So if I understood that explanation right, people would use a host, Airbnb host, because you get what you're looking for as opposed to going to a hotel where you have that standard, whatever it is. So, okay. Got it, I think. Thanks. I'm still taking you on.
Peter Stein?
Sure, let me try to clarify from my experience. I've used it just once. Once I got a hotel room in Putnam, New York. An Airbnb room in Putnam, New York. Now, I've done a fair amount of looking around for places to stay on the conventional sites. I can't remember what the names are, but the things that were there before Airbnb, which lists a whole bunch of motels and hotels. And when I tried Airbnb, it was sort of like that. But there was one thing that really stuck out that made it completely different was the range of the prices. I was looking for things in this Putnam County, and looking for a room for two people one night, and there was $65, $85, and then there was $3,500, and then another time there was $10,000. I mean, I'd never seen numbers like this. I can't exactly explain it, but that stood out as something that was entirely different than anything I'd seen before. Otherwise, except for that, it was just sort of like looking for a hotel room, which I've done for years and years on the web.
Thank you, Peter.
Okay. Tom, we appreciate your presentation tonight. What I'd like to do, Will, if you would, could we bring this resolution that we have out of your committee, I believe it's N, and see if we can't talk to that.
So, yes, I'm going to introduce the resolution that did come out of committee, which is...
Can we suspend just long enough? Kathy reminds me we need to put the screens back up. That helps the cameras.
Thank you. So I'm going to introduce a resolution that came out of our committee, and I want to thank Tom for drafting it on very, very short notice, right before Thanksgiving. Then it's going to be a substitute resolution, which I will explain sort of how that came about. But I would move resolution N, encouraging New York State to study and assess, and address, rather, issues related to the growth in short-term online rental, such as Airbnb. And I so move.
Is there a second? Seconded by Peter Stein. Does someone want to move a substitute on this initially? Martha, go ahead.
Yes, and it was, I got mine in my packet, not stapled, but kind of so in the mail or in my mailbox. So I trust however you get your regular packet, it should have been in there, and it was shows the track changes. So I would move it with a minor change in the last resolved. So the title is also slightly changed. Encouraging New York State to study and address issues related to growth in short-term online rental platforms such as Airbnb. And I move that to be substituted.
You're moving that as a substitute. Is there a second? Seconded by Mike Sigler.
And if I can just make a slight addition in the last resolved, that the Tompkins County Legislature encourages the New York State Association of Counties, the New York Association of Towns, and the New York Conference of Mayors to also take up this issue in 2015, since the towns and cities also have issues related to these lodging opportunities.
All right. Is that friendly, Mike?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so we have the substitute with those small revisions. Ready to vote on the substitute? Move to substitute it?
Oh, yeah.
On the motion to substitute. It's not on the motion. It's right. On the resolution itself. All those in favor of substituting, please raise your hand. Those opposed? That's unanimous. Who wants to speak to the substitute?
So if I could just maybe invite Tom back to the microphone again. And explain a little bit about how this came about. And I want to apologize to everybody because the process that created the substitute actually should have happened before the other. But Tom?
The process by which, the substitute came about. So I think Will became aware of the NYSAC calendar for bringing forward resolutions from counties for NYSAC to take issues up in the next year. They're having a conference. They needed to get it in December, and the STPB, Strategic Tourism Planning Board, did not meet in November, and so they had not yet had an opportunity to weigh in, nor had we had an opportunity to meet with the innkeepers and the B&B group that had brought forward their concerns, or the Airbnb operators. So we held a meeting at the Chamber of Commerce, and the president of the chamber and Bruce Stoff were at that meeting as well, along with representatives of the groups I mentioned, and Will and myself. And we all went around and discussed our where people were coming from, and came up with the language that you see as a consensus sort of statement about some improvements to the resolution to put forward to you. I was actually happily surprised that we reached a consensus amongst the different parties that were there.
Is there other discussion? Let's go with Kathy. I think you both had your hands up at exactly the same time. Kathy, then Dooley.
Thanks, Mike. I think this is premature, and I'll tell you why. For myself, I'm hearing different information, and I kind of like it when local representatives, get together and they try to raise awareness of and encourage compliance with local laws. And the impression I'm getting is that there's pretty good response so far. I didn't quite get all the numbers, but it sounded to me like of the people contacted, almost 50% responded in the positive. Maybe I misunderstood some of the numbers, but I'm reading one of the whereases here, and it's talking about let's see here. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the sixth whereas says, local hotel room occupancy tax funds are dedicated for use in developing local tourism. I completely agree with that. I completely support that. It says here, and uncollected hotel room occupancy taxes due to informal lodging properties hosting visitors through online rental platforms without registering as required with the Tompkins County Department of Finance have impacted the county's ability to grow and support the Tompkins County Tourism Program and the local tourism industry. Well, I admit I wasn't at a lot of these meetings or anything, but the impression I got is that there was a loss of approximately $50,000 projected last year, and maybe it'll be $60,000 this year. I don't see that as a huge loss. And in fact, the impression that I've gotten with what little I know about Airbnb is that a lot of times people that really couldn't afford the $250 or higher hotel room, or in some cases because we're already sold out. Everybody agrees we have a high occupancy rate here. People have options. So I think maybe we're getting greedy here and going after something that we can solve personally here ourselves and that people are already in the process of solving. But we're going to the state to ask them to help us solve it. Now, I've been at plenty of meetings where people have said, if you want something screwed up really well, invite the state in to help you. I think it's premature, and I love that people are cooperating and everything, but I really would like to see us try to let what's happening on the local level come to fruition. I think that the people that are relying on this for income to pay their taxes, to stay in their homes, and I know plenty of the B&B operators in my district and in downtown Ithaca where our taxes are huge, that's part of the reason they embarked on it, and they don't do it more than 20 days a year. I don't know what the definition is, and the fact that Leslin and many other people don't even know what Airbnb is means that we still have a lot of local educating to do. And I think that the group that's undertaking to do that and the group that's working with them through the Tourism Partnership are doing a terrific job. I think we may have a lot of unintended negative consequences by running this to the freight train that is the state. And for myself, I'll be voting against this.
All right, Julie.
Thank you. Well, I think that whereas Kathy just referred to does perhaps overstate the worry at this point, but what I wanted to talk about was a different part of the resolution. Martha suggested including the Conference of Mayors and the Association of Towns, and I agree with that they should be included. I also think the New York State Senate should be included. I have a version in, I think, your red packets that has some lines in red type, and you'll see, and the New York State Senate added in the resolve there. You'll also see a line taken from Tom Knipe's memo that was in the agenda, which I would suggest adding to this revised resolution as a second whereas. It reads, whereas online rental platforms, along with their hosts and guests, are major new players in the lodging economy. That seems like a factual statement, and it seems reasonable to add that. But the one I care most about is actually in the middle of the page, which is about the fifth or sixth whereas, which talks about the county's interest. The county wishes to help ensure a level playing field for all legal lodging operators, ensure public health and safety in the local short-term lodging market, and support local municipalities' enforcement of their local building and zoning codes, which was mentioned in one of the other arguments. And I think that as a county, we should have some interest in supporting our local municipalities. So that's my other addition.
Martha, are those friendly?
Yes, with one question, and I can't believe I'm saying this. Shouldn't there be an apostrophe after municipalities?
I was going to just put that into my folder. Thank you.
Mike, you seconded it. Are those friendly?
Well, as you make Martha's change, too, I think we're fine.
All right. So then we have the motion on the resolution on the table is the substitute with Martha's minor changes and with Dooley's suggested changes. Any further discussion? Carol Chalk.
So this is something that a few months from now I might be able to support. I rent my own home, I have in some years, just for the Cornell graduation weekend,
And one of the first things that I did when I started doing that was go and call my accountant and call the county and find out, you know, what do I owe? It turns out that if it's just that one weekend a year, as far as I know, you still don't. But I certainly would have been happy to pay the $100 tax. And my sense of the people who engage in this activity in Ithaca tends to be the same. This latest iteration of this discussion at the STPB is not the first time it had come up. It had came up a few years ago. And at the time, again, the response was similar. Should we, go and start instituting measures like this and finding ways to find people in violation? And some people, other people said, have we ever tried to call people and tell them they owe the tax? And this was about the occupancy tax specifically. And people said, no, we haven't. And the CVB at the time found an Ithaca College intern who went and figured out the homes and correlated it with the phone book or the tax records or whatever it was and started calling people. And if they called people or if Fred Bond at the time called people or whether it was Rick Snyder, not Rick, former Rick.
David Squire.
I used to think of you as the new David, but now it's the former Rick. So you've really been here now. At the time, we found 100% compliance. 100% of the people who were called based on that list said, oh, do I owe this tax? Where do I send it? And I know there have been some changes to the site. This time around, I don't think we went to those same measures, when it wasn't quite as easy based on just looking on the site, people said, okay, well, let's go this route. And as this came to committee, I don't think we even knew that there was a local Airbnb association. So we were very group, okay. And boy, isn't it typical of Tompkins County that we would have a local member of that group who traveled all the way to San Francisco, did you say, to learn about it and how to do it right. So I'm just not convinced that we've explored all the avenues. The other concern that I have is that, I also listened, because this came up a few years ago when I was liaison to the STPB, I've read a lot of articles. I followed when San Francisco had a lot of troubles with this because people were literally moving out of their homes and renting their homes every night. And then I listened to an interview. I think it was somebody in Eric Schneiderman's office and somebody in a New York City legal office talking about the differences between New York City and upstate, the rest of the state. New York City is different than the rest of the state in a lot of ways, but in particular because most of the buildings in New York City, people either have leases that prohibit them from having other people in for periods of time, or are if you own an apartment, you own it as a member of a condo association or a co-op. You have a co-op board, and you're not allowed to have guests that aren't registered with the front door, and that you have to have vetted in advance. So, and I've experienced that myself, visiting friends, as opposed to upstate New York, where people are tending to do this with homes that they own, and where it's with apartments, it's with different kinds of stipulations. If you're violating the terms of your lease, obviously that's an issue and should, your landlord should be getting after you. And then Ithaca and Tompkins County have a very different problem related to hotel nights, bed and breakfast nights, Airbnb nights, than anybody else, or almost anybody else, maybe with the exception of Saratoga Springs in upstate New York, which is that you can't get a hotel room here. So I'm really a little bit floored as to why we would rush to do this. And then we saw in this morning's Ithaca Journal that the local Airbnb group, I want to increase your stature, is jumping on this and having some public meetings. And so I'm just not sure, I think, that we've exhausted the possibilities yet to make sure that we solve our local market. And, boy, those of you who are on committees with me and Kathy know we don't agree on
it. I'd like to get Will next.
Say.
So a few months from now, if we came back and found and now we've got the Airbnb, one of national office, coming to visit us to see what can we work out. And I know there are places that have worked it out with them. So, if after a few months from now, we hear that, boy, nothing's worked out, I'd be ready to support this, but I would urge us to not jump on a bandwagon that I think that once we bring it to the state, our needs aren't necessarily taken into account.
Will Burbank's next, and then Martha, and then I'd like to move to a vote. Jim Dennis, he's got his hand up.
I see Jane Marie also with the
I just,
microphone.
If I could just offer,
sure.
I'm an educator by profession and a hospitality person by amateur status. I'd be very happy to meet with anyone who wants to find out how this platform actually works. It's a platform. It is not I don't work for Airbnb, and I'd be very happy to meet with anyone and sit down and explain to them how it works. I think I understand it really, really well, and I think what I'm finding is the level of misunderstanding about Airbnb is huge, and that concerns me.
Thank you. Will?
And I really appreciate all the effort Jane Marie and her group have been put into both educate us and their fellow hosts. This is good, but it does not, in my mind, eliminate the need for some level of study and consideration at a larger level. Yes, Ithaca is a wonderful community. We have folks such as Jane Marie doing such things. And yes, we are maybe having more of this activity locally, but it is happening worldwide, folks. And other communities have exactly the same problem we have. And while hosts vary tremendously, but they're the wonderful local hosts, the company, which we had a description of how they make their money, in my personal experience, is not, or at least I've dealt with several of the companies and found them remarkably unresponsive to consumers when problems emerge. It's essentially completely online, and if something goes awry, you can physically not reach a human being by any other way. I hope that the process of starting this resolution has, we'll get further compliance locally, but also if we are successful in having a better link to at least one the major player in this market, that's good for us locally. But I still think there's action at a larger level as well.
Martha Robertson, then Jim Dennis.
Thank you. Really appreciate the work that went into the original version and the revision. I think it was a great process. Thanks, Tom. Thanks, Jane Marie and others. A couple of years ago, we used an Airbnb in Massachusetts, and I looked on the website. We picked our place that we were interested in. I looked at the price and the blah, blah, and everything you have to do. And you can't phone the person, at least in my experience. You're not allowed to phone
the host.
You have to do an email thing, and not through your own email. It's through Airbnb. So there's a wall there. Okay. I asked, there was no place evident to pay tax, whether it was sales tax or room tax or whatever. So I emailed the person. I said, so is there no room tax or sales tax in your locality? And the person went, oh, huh, I don't know. And then she went away and found out and blah, blah, blah. So at least a couple of years ago, in that very popular tourist designation, the destination, there was no way to pay tax, and I only paid it because I asked about paying it. Now, this is this is about a bigger issue than Tompkins County's issue, and that's why we do these resolutions, not because, you know, because often we can solve a problem locally, but it's a problem that has a broader application. I would remind especially the listening public that the two resolves are that we ask the powers that be in the state government to study this issue in depth and explore possible actions. Study and explore. And we encourage the New York State Association of Counties and Towns and Mayors to also take up this issue. I think that is as reasonable a suggestion as could possibly be made, and to have to just bring this out into the public discourse to shine some light on the whole issue. Maybe things are fine, and then we'll be done. But thanks to Will's paying attention to the NYSAC schedule and Tom's moving very quickly on it, I think this is the right time to do this. And it's really a very modest and responsible thing to request.
Jim?
It's an evolutionary process, I think. And we have Airbnbs. We have a problem that's developed. And I think we need help to do that. The county is not in the position to manage Airbnb. It has to be done at the local level of the groups that have land use control, and that would be towns and cities that can do that. So for me, it's the New York State Conference of Mayors and the town group that is going to be most important in this game that's going on. I think we can solve the problem. I'm surprised to hear out of one of my colleagues' mouths that a group has formed up so quickly. 8 years ago, nobody talked about fracking. 20 minutes later, there was a group formed. There, you know, 6 years ago, solar panels, no one had any. 20 minutes later, there's a solar panel group. So my only question is, what's the group going to be next week? And, you know, I think we have to respond to that. They've done a good job. The resolution is good. It got us pointed in the right direction. I think we should support this and move on and see what happens from it all.
Ready to vote? We are voting on the substitute resolution as with minor amendments by Martha and amendments by Dooley. All those in favor, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Those opposed? 1, 2, 3. That is agreed to. I'd like to take the consent agenda because I think Lisa Holmes is probably waiting for an item on that. And why don't we just go through the consent agenda and then we'll come back to the other reports. We have some appointments. Out of the Office for the Aging, to the Office of Aging, Office of Aging Advisory Committee, Betty Ann Balcom. To the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Karen Baer. To the Mental Health Subcommittee, Paula Winner. To the Community Mental Health Services Board, Paul J. Winner. To the Environmental Management Council, Diana I. L. Bryant and Brian Eden. To the Advisory Board on Indigent Representation, Jerome Meyersack and John Fitzgerald. To the Criminal Justice Advisory Board, Susan Robinson. To the Emergency Communications Review and Oversight Committee, Margaret Ryan.
And those
we also have some resolutions. Resolution, if anyone wants it off the consent agenda, just say so. Resolution A, ID 5290, Budget Adjustment, Increased Medical Expense and Medicaid Revenue, Mental Health Department. Resolution B, 5286, authorizing the Tompkins County Office for the Aging to contract with Doyle Medical Monitoring for the Personal Emergency Response System Program. Resolution C, 5279, Budget Adjustment, Federal Salary Sharing Funds for Mental Health Department. 5278, Budget Adjustment for Unity House. That was D. E is ID 5277, budget adjustment for Lakeview Mental Health Services, Mental Health Department. Resolution F, 5276, budget adjustment for Cayuga Addiction Recovery Services of the Mental Health Department. And out of the Government Operations Committee, Resolution G, 5249, correction of errors. And Resolution H, adoption of apportionment of taxes for 2015. May I have a motion on the consent agenda? Leslin McBean Claiborne, seconded by Dooley Kiefer. Discussion? All those in favor of the consent agenda, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous. We'll go back to Chair's report and Chair's appointments. I have no appointments tonight, but I would mention on the Chair's report that we did hold a media event with Ed Marks, our Commissioner of Planning, and Michael Stamm from Tompkins County Area Development. We've been concerned at the county level of an undercurrent that we're hearing in the community of concern, both on energy issues having to do predominantly with natural gas and coal, and also the issues of are we impeding economic development by looking at some of the possible requirements for renewable energies or some of our goals. Fortunately, the TCAD and the State Department have worked together. They came up with a memorandum of how we can go forward in our county working together to meet both goals. That is to how can we foster economic development, make this a place where businesses want to be and learn or and build, rather, here and employ people, and at the same time give due regard to how we can encourage renewable sources of energy and have less reliance on such things as fossil fuels. So it's a start. Both those entities, the TCAD, which is our public-private partnership for economic development, and our planning department, which is a department of the county, will be working in the future to go ahead with certain strategies as to how we can work together on these issues. Things like energy roadmaps and determining what we need for industrial development parks or changes in rules for parks or those kinds of things will all be important in the next few years, and we will be moving ahead with those. But I think the message that we were trying to put out is these things are not mutually exclusive. And we do best when we work together on these kinds of things. That's all I have. If there's no questions, I'll move on to a report by our county administrator, Joe Mariana.
Thanks, Mike. I have a couple of very disparate items on my list tonight, beginning with a little bit of good news with respect to our health benefits consortium. At the beginning of next year, the village of Homer, it looks like, is going to become a member of the Health Benefits Consortium. So we've now gone beyond our county twice. The first was with the city of Cortland, and now with the small village of Homer. So through us, the village of Homer is going to be able to save a significant amount of dollars for their health care. It's interesting because they'll be able to count that, this is editorial, toward their savings goals under the property tax freeze because of what we did. And we won't, our savings won't be counted under that savings threshold. But still, it's I think it's a good affirmation of the wisdom of what we did here, which is to pool our health benefits business, and that provides a particular benefit to the smaller municipalities, such as the village of Homer. Very different topic, Energize New York. We've tried to keep you posted on what's going on with that because we think it's important, and we think within the first quarter, this is something that we may want to bring back to the legislature. You recall it's a way to finance energy-related improvements to commercial properties that exist right now, so for retrofits, through the property tax bill. Over the past couple of weeks, we've had a conference call that involved Jonathan Wood and Rick Snyder, and I believe the same kind of conference call happened on the city's side, because the city will be a party here too, to make sure that when we get into the weeds of this proposal, it still stands up. So we're doing our due diligence through that. I think it's fair to say that we didn't discover anything that would take us off track. We ask a lot of detailed questions. There's a particular question of bankruptcy that we want to make sure we know what the answers are. So we've asked for a little paper, a memo on that from bond counsel, from their group. But I think it's fair and accurate to say that we are making progress on this. The next step will be a workshop involving legislators to make sure that we all understand all the aspects of this, to make sure that we go into this with our eyes open and know clearly what we are about to put out. But again, we think it's looking very good. Different kind of climate type issue, the workforce climate survey. We've also, through Paula Leslin and I, have tried to keep you posted on the progress there. It's moving rapidly forward toward the distribution of surveys in the middle part of January. I think they go out on January 19th to our employees. They come back on the 30th. Through really Paula's leadership here and through WDIC, a couple of groups have been formed to make sure that we have strong participation and understanding of what the survey is all about. So there's an implementation team that's working on warming people up to be able to participate. Another group that is looking at the survey itself to make sure that the questions that we ask are the right questions. So that is ongoing, and again, by January 19th, we should be out with the survey, and it won't be terribly long after that that we're able to look at results, and importantly, the things that we want to do as a county to respond to the findings that come out of that survey. So again, good forward progress on that. Somewhat related to that, and again, this is to Paula's credit and WDIC, the reading and discussion program that you're very aware of. Paula attended an event, I think, last night where we've been awarded another round of funding to support those efforts of about $2,000, I think, through the Community Foundation, the funding source. So kudos for her, and that program is continuing with help from outside funding. Take a breath, because this is very different as well. Thursday morning, there's a meeting that TCOG is hosting with Senator Tom O'Meara and Assemblywoman Barbara Lifton so that they can talk about what's going on in Albany, and we can talk about what some of our concerns are with Albany, including the property tax freeze, the look-back period, the lack of meaningful mandate relief, and so forth. So that is open to all of you. It runs from 9 o'clock to 11 o'clock Thursday morning in the old jail conference room. Last thing in my report is that I think I told you the last time that Paul and I attended a conference in Saratoga last week that was hosted by Cornell University and the Fiscal Policy Institute. Both of us were on panels. Both of us heard from both faculty and students about kind of evidence-based observations about the environment that we're in, an environment of fiscal stress, the effects of a tax cap, appropriate local responses, the differences between an austerity strategy and an investment strategy. We had an opportunity to talk from the ground level about how things like tax caps and so forth are affecting us. I think it was a good opportunity for us to listen to some very bright students of Cornell University who made presentations, faculty that is not only intellectually attuned to what's going on at the local level, but also is very grounded, has a very good understanding of what we deal with on the local government front. We also heard from a lot of unions who were there. It was through the Fiscal Policy Institute, a great deal of union presence there, so we got to listen to that input as well. And I actually got to participate on the final panel with some folks who were very big thinkers. Ron Deutsch, who many of you know, was on that group. It was moderated by Susan Arbiter, who all of you probably know. So it was a real good opportunity to share ideas and commiserate a little bit, but also think about what do we do in response to this environment that we find ourselves in. So I just wanted to report briefly on that. And again, Paula was also on a panel as a part of that that day in Saratoga. So that's my report.
Questions for the county administrator, Julie Kiefer.
I wondered if it's possible to get a look at the climate survey questions before they're sent out. I'm not on any team, so I'm not working on them, but I'm really curious.
I'm going to look over my shoulder at Paula and see what Paula might say. Sure.
How?
We'll find a way.
Can I just ask why? My inclination is no. But I'm just going
to
ask.
Is that because I'm expected to answer them?
Yes.
Well, it's an intellectual curiosity.
Intellectual curiosity. I like that phraseology. I'm going to use that. But thank you.
Mm-hmm. If I can just kind of say in response, I think we need to appreciate that the firm that we've hired to do this, this is their core business. This is what they do. So they bring a great level of professionalism and kind of evidence-based approaches to these questions. So I think we have to respect to a fair degree what they're presenting to us in questions. We certainly will have an opportunity to tweak them a bit. We want to make sure they're relevant to what we want to learn from this report. But with respect to the kind of the survey instrument itself, I think we have to recognize we've hired a firm very good at this kind of work.
I don't expect to mess with them. I didn't mean that. It's literally curiosity.
Thank you.
Will, did you have your hand up?
I did not.
Okay. Then I go to Peter, then to Martha.
To the county administrator, were there any answers to those questions or... something new that could be said that made you feel good? I've heard those questions, I've heard those same complaints go on now for years. I just wondered if they had anything positive to say about them.
You're talking about at the conference and some of the reports, presentations
yeah.
that were made? Well, I mean, I could probably go long on this, and maybe it's better to go to a committee to do it. But, there are people at Cornell like Mildred Warner who have taken a really hard look at what works and what doesn't work with respect to shared services and consolidation. So in terms of guiding policy and policy makers, I think if people listen carefully to her, they know where to go. It's not in those giant consolidations. It's not in two or three towns becoming one town and those kinds of things. That the real go power is in shared services. And you can produce efficiencies there to a degree, probably not to the level the governor is looking for, but some efficiencies. But also you can improve sometimes to the right shared services and improvement in quality. And if anything, her focus is on can you improve quality, much like we've done in our assessment department by consolidation, can you improve quality through these kinds of shared services? In terms of how to approach the policy decisions, what should you do there? I mean, the advice that is coming out of Fiscal Policy Institute, and I think to some degree Cornell, is we have to do a better job in explaining the value of public services and what people get in return for their taxes. And also, we can't stop investing in programs and infrastructure. To the extent that we do that, if that's our policy reaction to property tax caps and things like that, if we stop doing things, there are tremendous costs that aren't realized when you just look at the bottom line of the budget. They have their effect on the community, the society, and future economic growth. So it's really just kind of a perspective on things, which in turn may shape the way we respond to our environment. There's no magic wands out there, Peter.
I mean, the reason I'm asking is it seems to me we've now come to a situation where the new normal is the tax cap. And we all accept it. Everybody in the state accepts it. We know what's going on. And I just wonder if we've reached, I mean, I don't think there's anybody who's complaining about it on a statewide level that has any voice that can be heard. And I'm just wondering if there's anything hopeful. I'm hoping to hear that something.
Right.
And never mind.
No, I guess the last thing I'd say, and again, I can go along on this, probably already have, and can do it in committee. Certainly one message that we tried to create, and in the Cornell research, they kind of back it up. There ought to be a laser focus on one thing, and everybody in that conference had a shared interest in it, and that is real mandate relief. State takeover of these mandated services. And again, is there really a savings for the taxpayer if you go from a local property tax base to a state base? We've talked about that. The answer is yes. But there does seem to be a consensus that that's one way to provide property tax relief and allow us to sustain programs.
Okay. Thank you.
I've got Martha, then Carol.
You mentioned that there ought to be an effort to educate the public about the value of government. Perhaps they should start with the governor. Were there any school representatives there?
There are a lot of school reps there.
Okay, because I heard a bit of a radio show today about schools having to implement the Common Core with lots and lots of new a lot of changes and need to for a lot of many hours of training and curriculum development and dealing with that at the same time as they had the tax cap to deal with. So okay. Basically my question was Peter's too, so thanks.
Carol? Yeah, I had two questions about the shared services segment of your report. You said that Homer gets to count joining the consortium under their shared services credit, but not us. I mean, I understand that they excluded the portion of what we'd done from before the decree came down from the state that we're trusting. But I'm not understanding why we wouldn't get credit for the same increment, if there are any incremental additions. That's one question.
Okay. I don't think we're going to realize the savings. It's a really good question. Could we, let's say that there was some money that was saved. Could we say that that's a new shared service? It's conceivable, Carol. I think with the village of Homer, maybe even with the city of Cortland, I'm not sure that there's a reciprocal savings to us. We've taken our savings. So we've gone from retail to wholesale prices. So we've taken that savings. And now others who are currently paying retail are getting the benefit of those wholesale prices. And you know those are not accurate words, but they're getting that benefit. Had we both saved, we might be able to take advantage of it. The irony here is it's the two municipalities in Cortland County who are going to be able to count these as savings and none of the communities in Tompkins County.
So assuming that this might grow beyond that, I just think we should think carefully about setting the precedent that we're not going to take it because it might, you know, it might add up over time. And then the other question is if we're inviting Barbara Lifton and Tom O'Mara in, have we made an attempt to invite in our other senators?
We have, yeah. And only these two have accepted the invitation.
I think Senator Seward was originally going to come, and then he had to cancel out.
I just encourage us to, you know, deliver the results of the conversation.
Can we move on? Go to County Attorney Jonathan Wood.
Yeah, I requested a short executive session, but have no other report.
Any questions for John? Finance Director Rick Snyder.
I have no report tonight, but I just want to let the legislators know that I'll be off from work from this Friday, the 19th, right up until December 28th. So I will miss you at a few committee meetings next week. But I just want to bring that attention to the chair and to the rest of the legislators.
Thank you, Rick. You aren't heading for sunshine, are you?
No, I'm just heading for Groton.
Oh, okay. Well, there's always sunshine in Groton.
Always.
Any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Go to committee reports. Public Safety Committee, Jim Dennis is vice chair.
I have no report. We had a very short meeting at the beginning of this meeting, and there will be a resolution, or was it passed? No, I have no report.
Thanks for reporting that you have no report. Okay. We'll go to Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee. Leslie McBean Claiborne is the chair.
Thanks to Joe and Paula for the shared information about what we're doing at WDIC. I just want to take this opportunity for WDIC to say to our community members and those of us around the table who have been involved with the national issues regarding the death of young African-American males in encounters with our law enforcement. We appreciate people continuing to bring light to the issues in a manner that can be heard. I do want to mention that I find it interesting that some of the more subtle, what I call subtle protests by professional athletes and so on are getting the kind of criticism they are getting. This is a huge issue. Some of you are grandparents of children who are of African descent. I'm a mom of a young 20-year-old male and a 27-year-old male, black male. So it's close to home for me. And I would hope that people will see the value in, you know, T-shirts that say, I can't breathe, or hands up, don't shoot, as conversation rather than a place for criticism. We want national conversation and change, and all of us want to be a part of. And I think those kinds of expressions of protest are there for helping us to keep the conversation alive and go to a place where we are hoping for change, not a place where we start blaming victims and pointing fingers at those of us who have big concern about the issue. So I just wanted to take my WDIC opportunity to just say that and continue to encourage people to not let the issue die, especially us at local government levels who can do something today at public safety. I asked about where we were in terms of body cameras. I remember in August, the conversation started at a public safety meeting. The sheriff was well on board with it and well in favor of seeing it happen. And I know funding is an issue. And so the vice chair assured me that it's continuing. It's a thing that's continuing to be talked about and looked into. And we hope sometime within the new year, perhaps, you know, to identify vendors in the proper type of equipment that we citizens can feel relatively, I'd say relieved for the lack of a better term, that at least we're being responsive and looking for positive ways of dealing with this issue as opposed to negative ways. You know, laying down in the street may not necessarily garner the kind of response we want or result we want. It will bring light and continue to keep the issue in the forefront, but we want to see change that's going to benefit not only our community members but also our law enforcement members, because goodness knows things do go both ways and there's, you know, false accusations that can occur as well. So we want to make sure that everybody is protected, that lives are not lost when they didn't need to be. So thank you for allowing me to put on my WDIC hat and share those thoughts.
Thank you, Leslin. Well said. Questions for Leslin?
Oh, Mr. Chair, if I may just also say my public service announcement is our last meeting, that in the spirit of the holidays, please, folks, don't drink and drive. Stay at home. Enjoy your Kahlua at home. Don't get behind the wheels of a car. It always is too dangerous, and again, the potential for lost lives or people getting severely injured. You know, Carol, sorry about what happened to you, but even in the parking lot of the grocery store, because I saw so many near misses in the parking lot, and I think it's because people are, one, in too big a hurry, and two, many of them, I think, have been out enjoying too much of the holidays thus far.
Well, I can't disagree with that one. Let's move to Health and Human Services Committee. Peter Stein is our chair.
Peter Stein will try to give his report.
It's okay to be brief.
Excuse me?
It's okay to be brief.
Are you sure? Well, I'll try. My throat may make it briefer than I want. I just wanted to start by saying this is now, you know, the end of a year. This is I've now given 12 of these reports. I hope that they have been helpful or interesting to you. I myself have found the act of giving them to be very helpful to me. It organizes for me what's important, what's interesting, and by comparing them, I often see issues that came up and then were dealt with. So I have four issues I want to talk about. The first one, very briefly, Kathy reported on it earlier about the joint project of the health department and the mental health department to together purchase patient health records and saving money by getting those licenses together, picking the same vendor. Those departments are required by law to do this. There's no choice about it. And they have to be done in a confidential way so that none of the information gets in the wrong places and all of the information gets into the right places. It's not easy. It's complicated. But there was one thing that Kathy didn't say, which I thought was interesting. The whole project that didn't cost us a nickel. This is all paid for by the state and the federal government. Second, I want to report is an issue that we talked about 3 months ago for the youth services. Ms. Hendricks informed us 3 months ago that there was a closing of Berkshire Farm and Services, which has provided a program for dealing with young people on the verge of being independent people, but not quite there yet, who get into problems with their families and leave the family that they've grown up with and leave without having the resources to open a living arrangement for themselves. What happens to those young people? And sometimes bad things happen. We had in fact used this Berkshire Farm and Service to help us out with that, but they went out of the business. Amy Hendricks was concerned. There's now a solution for that. The Family and Children's Service have designed a new program by Ms. Matsudera that can able to accommodate about 50 young people at the same time to give them reasonable housing operations if they don't want to stay with their families. And the focus here is always to try to convince them to go back to their families. One thing that concerned me was a number that I'll tell you I was really a little bit worried about. It turns out that our program, which by the way is staffed by volunteers, by college-age volunteers, which is most of the staff that sits and works with these young people, we have the ability to serve 40 people at the same time. Now that's to be compared with 500, which is the total number of people in a given year who need this service. So whether 40 people at any one time is enough to service 500 people in a year, I'm not sure, but I intend to look into that. It's the sort of thing that I think we ought to focus on. It's a bad thing if we have young people who have no place to live and are just wandering aimlessly in the streets. Quickly, DSS head Patricia Carey reported on the heap season. It started. HEAP, that's low-income people who get extra money to heat their homes. And just to let you know, what it's like in the county. At the third day after the opening of the heap season, there were 700 inquiries of people who were looking for funds. I just passed that on. And the last thing I want to report on is something that we've been talking about for a long time, or at least I've been talking about for a long time. I found it quite interesting, and I'd just like to spend a little more time. Namely, we finished the project of this year. You voted, this meeting, you voted earlier to give a contract for COFA to the Doyle Medical Monitoring of Rochester to provide an up-to-date PERS system. And I'd like to talk a little bit about this because I think it's a very interesting solution to a problem which has combined our own organization, and a private contractor to work together to solve a particular problem. So this company that will now provide the instrumentation and the dealing with calls that come in, have a call center of their own, is in fact, in certain sense, is someone who might be another firm trying to do the same thing that we do. Namely, this company, the Doyle Medical Monitoring, has their own PERS program. And so what it is that we have found a way of having them work together with us in a partnership to renovate and bring up to date our own program. And I'd like to describe the partnership a little bit. First off, what is PERS? Anyway, PERS makes it possible for an individual with limited mobility to summon help to deal with a medical emergency. And the problem with COFA's old system is that it wouldn't work anymore because it could not accommodate internet telephones and cell phones. It could only work with landlines, and that's not enough anymore. Now, after carefully considering all available options, COFA decided to look for a commercial partner to help us modernize our PERS systems in a way that would be both attractive to our commercial partner and a benefit to our own clients. Now, Doyle Medical Monitoring, the one they chose, has a complete working system, including equipment and a dedicated call center. COFA, on the other hand, has an ongoing relationship with clients who need the service, who have a relationship with COFA, and who trust COFA. And in this kind of business, where there are people going out door to door to sell things to our clients, you can't always serve. The client does not know what to do, but they trust COFA. And so the Doyle Medical Monitoring has that. And as I say, COFA has an ongoing relationship with clients who need the service and who trust COFA. The problem is that many of these clients cannot afford to pay Doyle's rates. So here's what happened. What happened was that essentially that COFA took over from Doyle a lot of the work that they do, namely the work of going door to door and looking for these people and talking them into purchasing this. That will not be done by Doyle anymore, but by COFA, who has a relationship with the people that need that. In return for that, and that's a big saving to Doyle for the people that they sign up, in return for that, Doyle has agreed to make a carry out a sliding scale for how much those people have to pay for the Doyle thing, which is more or less the same as the scale that COFA has used when it itself was supplying these services. So it's a very nice way of working together. There's an up-to-date system. It does what we have to do, and it allows us to do what really is our business, namely deal with clients who need this particular service and make sure they get it. So I was really, and by the way, it does cost us something. The savings to Doyle are not enough to completely subsidize the people who need who need the sliding scale. But the estimate of COFA is that this will cost us less than $40,000 a year. And so for this less than $40,000 a year, every elderly person who needs that kind of the service will have one in the county. So that ends my report.
Thank you, Peter. Are there questions? It's 7:30. Let's take 10 minutes and come back about 20 minutes of 8. Well, let's get started. Next up is Kathy Luz Herrera, who chairs our Facilities and Infrastructure.
Oh, no. I have a resolution.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah,
yes, you do,
point.
Peter. You didn't move your resolution. I didn't realize that, or I wouldn't have ended when we did. Go ahead.
So what's the resolution?
Resolution I, requesting assistance from New York State Association of Counties.
Requesting assistance from New York State Association of Counties to address problems with New York State designated non-emergency medical transportation. It's been approved by HHS, and I'd like to move it.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dan Klein.
I think it speaks for itself. There's a problem we learned about Gadabout, that Gadabout is losing much of its funding because of the person in Syracuse that gives all of these medical transportation things to cabs and not to these kinds of organizations, and that creates a problem. Then, I just learned, which I didn't know when we were talking about this, that this is may create a serious problem for TCAT, because TCAT uses Gadabout for doing its ADA compliance. And they may find that they have to fund it more money than they have in order to keep that alive. So it's a serious problem.
Okay, questions for Peter, or questions on this resolution, excuse me. Martha Robertson.
Peter, or anybody else, do you know if there are other, I can't imagine Gadabout is unique. There are other similar volunteer or local nonprofit services like this?
I have been led to believe that Gadabout is certainly not completely unique, but it's sort of unique, that they're not everybody and not nearly everybody has that kind of a system. That's what I've been told.
But there might be others.
There may well be others, yeah.
Well,
so what we heard was essentially the call centers are largely unaware of paratransit. So sort of their system just defaults to the taxi companies. And there have been attempts to reach them, make that, hey, are you aware? And it seems to be just built into a very large, and by the way, for-profit system that was instituted supposedly to make everything more efficient. But it's
Dan?
Yeah, my understanding is that paratransit represents a significant percentage of transit money for most rural upstate counties. In Tompkins County, it's less so, which is why TCAT isn't going to be impacted in the same way. But that basically is why Tioga County's transit went out of business, because their paratransit represented a huge proportion, like 90% of the funding for their bus system.
Yeah.
So, yeah, everyone is going to be, many more people will be affected by this.
Dooley?
I have a question about point 3 in the resolved. It has to do with the word which. It says persons with disabilities should be provided transportation in the least restrictive method, which can be provided through community transportation services, including demand response. Well, I don't know what is intended to be meant there. Is it the least restrictive method that can only be provided through community transport, in which case it would be that. I just don't know what is meant to be said there.
I must say, I don't know. Do you know?
I guess, can I just take a quick look at that?
I think it's that.
I guess I would interpret, yeah, when you say that.
It certainly is that.
I just picked one.
It's saying that that paratransit is the way that it's often done. I think that's the point it's trying to make.
I mean, does it mean you don't call an ambulance if you don't need an ambulance? Is that what that means?
Well, you may mean it can best be provided through community transportation services, but I don't know what you were meaning to say, so I didn't know how to read this, and I still don't. So,
well, can we get over this little hump? Is there a proposal to
change it to that?
All right. Any, is that friendly, Dan?
Yes.
All right, then change to that. Anything else? Can we vote?
I was at the MPO meeting today, ITCTC, and we were looking at what's the forthcoming funding problems. And in addition to gadabout, fish was mentioned. And I don't know whether the call center that you're talking about in Syracuse ignores fish also. That's another local not-for-profit medical transport group.
Will, you have a response?
My understanding, Dooley, is the fish is actually linkages are made through our local 211 center. So I think that is a different system.
Well, I guess in terms of looking for funding to support it, it needs some support, and it goes through the same grant cycles.
I see. Okay.
Martha?
I understand that on Thursday morning, our agenda with Senator O'Mara and Assemblywoman Lifton is mostly about the shared services look back. I wonder if we can make sure that this issue and also the Airbnb issue are put on the list. Thanks. And you know, this one may be really especially because things are going to go out of business quick, you know, now, soon.
Thank you.
Can we vote? Those in favor of the resolution, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous.
Mr. Chair? Mike?
Yes, Dan.
I just wanted to credit and thank Dwight Mangle from DSS and Lisa Holmes from Office of the Aging for putting this together.
Thanks, Dan. All right, now let's go to Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. Mr. Barrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We met on December 15th. Seems like a long time ago, but it wasn't. You'll see on the agenda two resolutions. Those are things that we discussed. We also talked about the Ellis Hollow Road project, phase two, and we had show and tell art pictures that accompanied the discussion. We decided that we will set a meeting for Monday, January. I think it's 20th. Somebody help me that was at that meeting. Anyway, because the meeting ordinarily would be on a date that is a holiday, I believe. It might be on Martin Luther King Day. So I just wanted to say that, 10:30 here, January.
22nd, maybe?
It's a Monday? Monday? Yeah, okay. Sounds good.
I'm sorry. It's the 19th is Martin Luther King.
January 20th.
So the 20th?
Tuesday the 20th?
Yeah, it's Tuesday the 20th.
It was
just prior to the ledger meeting.
Okay. Yeah, well, I wrote down 4:30 or 5:00.
That sounds right. That sounds right. 20. Yep. Okay, so now we know about that. So briefly, I'm just going to talk about these two resolutions. The first one is a simple budget adjustment to transfer funds from highway materials to the town services account, snow removal. Highway Division, and it's Resolution J, and I so move it.
Seconded by Dave McKenna.
Thank
this
you.
Discussion? Mike Sigler.
I just wanted to know, I mean, this is just the town of Carolina. Why were they the only ones that were kind of like out of budget?
The explanation kind of explains it. The winter weather caused higher than anticipated expenses to the town for maintenance, and so we needed to the account was underfunded, so we needed to even it out.
No, I was just wondering, because no other town came forward. That's why I'm wondering why they're the only town that...
Joe, can you help?
Maybe a little bit. There are only three towns that we compensate in real time, in a time and materials way. So it's Caroline, Danby, and Dryden. So this is one of those three. So their budget pressures we see immediately. The other two apparently have had a different pattern this year. Caroline needed it. The other towns where we have these relationships, it's a lag. So we will be paying them in 2015 for the actual experience of 2014.
Gotcha.
So this one is a variable, call it a real-time variable.
Okay.
Okay.
Cool.
Carol?
I was going to answer it if somebody else could.
Fine. Thank you. All right. Ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous. Kathy? K?
Resolution K, authorization, and we're moving the revised that was adopted by committee. It should be in your folder. Authorization to execute supplemental agreement number 2 with Barton and LaJudas DPC for design services. I practiced Pine Tree Road bike and pedestrian paths, Town of Ithaca, and I so move.
Is there a second? Seconded again by Dave.
If I could just say, the
sure.
Revised version that we're moving has some suggested changes offered by Julie Cooper that make it clear that this is a second supplemental agreement for the already increased expenses estimated not to exceed $62,000. And I thought, and so did Jeff, that was a good clarification to make.
So you're moving it with that change? You're accepting
well,
that?
Well, the committee actually
committee did that.
Accepted
right.
that change.
All right. So it's the revised resolution we're talking about.
Yes.
Mike Sigler.
I just have a few questions. Is this the same part of the same project that's way over budget, the $400,000?
Yes.
Yes. I mean, aren't we debating whether to even go forward with that project or not? So this would seem like, why are we spending all this money here when we're still debating whether to do the larger project?
Let's have Kathy respond.
Well, we discussed it at committee, and the approach that many of us, well, I'll articulate the way I approach it. We signed a contract with them. It's incumbent upon us to fulfill that contract. We could not, and Jonathan would probably have some things to say to us, but, since we agreed to do this and this work has already been done, we're pretty much obligated to pay it by honor and by contract. So I know that we're not going forward, and we're very clear about the fact that we've put this on the shelf for now. But the fact is, this work has already been done. So that's...
But we did not agree to $62,000. I mean...
Actually, we did.
We didn't approve that.
Actually,
no, because you're asking us to approve it now. They
well,
decided to do $62,000 worth of work that we didn't agree to.
Actually, that's not true, Mike. We did
that's
agree to it. The legislature is voting on it now, but in the past, we agreed to a contract, and we didn't keep up with it as we should have, and the expenses were already spent.
I read this as we agreed to a $195,000 contract.
Maybe Joe can step in and save me here.
Yeah, we did. So we did agree to that contract. And then as we were making decisions about what else we should be doing on this project, like making it compliant with ADA, like how do we do retaining walls and those kinds of things, they were working with us on those modifications. It's those modifications that have brought that cost up by $400,000, but the engineering services that were performed were being done kind of on the fly that led to that new estimate. So these costs have, in fact, been incurred. The engineering firm has done the work that is described in this.
I'm not saying they didn't do the work. But I went through a house rebuild. There's no way my contractor would have said, yeah, well, we're a very large percentage of our budget, and we don't have any approval for that. This is weird.
You can vote no, right. Mike, and
no,
I'll
I will,
understand.
But this is weird. $62,000 more is a huge percentage over $195,000.
And I couldn't agree with you more. There's
a
tendency to want to find someone to blame. And if I could assign it, I would. But the fact is, we're very responsive, and we had a lot of complaints from the community about this. We listened to those complaints, and we have tried really hard to accommodate them. And in doing so, in the design process, the numbers got away, and, you know, I'll take responsibility for it. And you're entitled to vote no if you want to, but the fact is we did agree to this, and we're stuck with it. Now, I'd also like to say that we are in a situation where one of the funders that had agreed to help us out with this has changed their mind, or they say they can't now. And that's a real problem for us, and it's one of the primary reasons that we have to stall now and just say, forget it, we can't go forward. Now, I've simplified and probably said this more baldly than it needs to be said. Now, the diplomatic people in the room, please make it right.
Carol's next.
So at the time that we were designing this project and there was a scope of work, both the committee and then as it was coming to the legislature, because it came back and was discussed here with everybody, quite a number of times, as well as at the committee, the designers were very clear when we said, well, we'd like to have these additional designs completed. And they were very clear at the time, that will be a change order. If they used the words change order, but they said this, that will be an additional to what we had, the number of options that we had said as part of your contract. And we said, sure, yes, that we need to have this because we have public purposes here, including the ADA compliance. And we said, go ahead. So this is a bill that's just coming due.
Who said go ahead?
That's a different – so there's two issues here that we shouldn't confuse. Both the committee and the legislature said we want to hear these other options. And we want you to proceed to a stage of design. So what we will have at the end of this is plans. We will then have a separate decision to make at some point, which is the one you alluded to, which is – knowing or at whatever cost it will be when we go ahead to bids with the final engineering estimates of what those bids will be, we will then have to make a decision. Do we sit with these designs that we've got that will then be complete? Or do we go ahead, even if it might be more expensive than we thought, to build it? But this is specifically for the design. And we did already tell them, yes, we want the change order, just as you would when you were walking through the house with your builder and you say, boy, I'd really like to have a closet there, but I didn't see that when the original plans. And they say, yes, it's going to mean a change order. And you say, go ahead, but you don't necessarily have the exact amount in hand. And then they come and it's expensive. But that's what we've got here. So this is something that we had said we would do. Now, if you don't pay, if you say, I think that change order, you're coming back with the bill higher, I mean, boy, their recourse is going to be that we don't get to hire them anymore, and I think we generally like their work.
Martha Robertson.
Essentially the same, but isn't the issue about the money that was pulled that had been pledged, isn't that about Ellis Hollow Road, Kathy, and not this one?
You're right.
My understanding was that the Cornell and the town of Ithaca both are putting in money, Cornell much more than the town, but both putting something in. And when the budget went over, we asked them to do additional, to put something additional, and they said no. That's a different deal. But
I would like to point out that Cornell will benefit from this bike and pedestrian path project in a big way, especially with the proposed development of East Hill Plaza.
Okay. All right, shall we vote? All those in favor of the resolution, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? I have one opposed.
And if I may, just briefly, I'd like to say how much I appreciate the understanding and support of the committee members, me being a chair that hadn't served last year, and also how much I appreciate the support of staff and the department heads. And it's a good committee, and there's a lot going on with us, and especially challenges this past year. But I think we've done a really good job, especially considering the context of a lot of these. And I just want to commend everybody involved, from Joe, you know, all the way through to the folks that are out there in the snow, clearing the roads for us, you know, when we need to get to work on an icy day. So everybody's helping us out. I appreciate it. And happy holidays to everyone.
Thank you, Kathy. Dooley?
I've been wondering why we did not create supplemental agreement number 2 before now.
I don't know who can answer that. Joe, do you know the answer to that?
I'm not sure
I understand the question.
Can you repeat it, please, for Joe?
Supplemental agreement number 2 with the contractor. And I don't understand why we didn't do this sooner than now. That's all. Have they not given us a dollar figure until just recently?
I don't think we were fully aware of the dollar figure until recently. So, again, we can...
I was just curious.
We can get you an answer.
Right.
Okay, so let's move ahead now to Economic Development Committee. Will Burbank is the chair.
Thank you. Well, Mike, the committee has not met since our last meeting, and we thank you for considering the Airbnb resolution tonight. But we will be having a meeting before our next meeting of the legislature. We'll meet on what would be the normal date for a monthly meeting, which will be Monday, January 5th. And at this point, I don't have a lot on agenda, but I have one very, very important thing on the agenda, which is having the committee take a serious look at the TCAD's economic strategy. And they are updating their plan. This is going to probably be their plan for the next 5 years. We, at our last meeting, did actually not have the document, so I've asked that everybody get that. I would encourage any of you that care about economic development to either come to that meeting, or I will try to see that link gets out to everybody so you can see the plan and send your comments and thoughts. They're coming to a wrap on this one, so this is kind of our last chance to weigh in. And that is my report.
Thanks. Questions for Will? Will, can you move your resolutions?
I can. I would move Resolution L, which is appropriation from contingent fund, terminal pay, workforce development coordinator, workforce development one-stop center. And I so move.
Is there a second? Seconded by Carol. I think we need a short-form roll call on that.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
And he knows. That's unanimous.
Secondly is Resolution M, appropriation from contingent fund, terminal pay, workforce development, one-stop center, and I so move.
Is there a second? Second by Martha Robertson. Again, a short-form roll call, please.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Any noes? That's unanimous.
And thank you. Concludes my report.
Let's go to Government Operations Committee. Nathan Shinagawa is the chair.
Yes, the Government Operations Committee met last month, and I was not at the last legislature meeting due to the flu, but I believe that Dooley gave an update on the committees. But I do have two resolutions that I would like to talk about today, before I move today. The first is Resolution O, amending Resolution number 102 of 2014, establishing standard work days for elected and appointed officials of Tompkins County. And I so move.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave McKenna.
And we have this resolution before us because though we passed this resolution earlier in the year, earlier this year, there was some differing viewpoints on how to account for the hours that legislators have that are counted for the pension system. And so we had recommendations from the state on how to put those numbers in, and this is in compliance with those recommendations.
Any questions? Ready to vote? Or Carol?
Yes. So what is the number?
the units under record of activities result, and what is the number that's needed there to be seen as working our full allotted hours?
I think Kathy, can you answer that question?
That column reflects the average days worked per month.
Okay. She wants to know if that's enough to, what do you have to qualify for the pension?
For 100%.
There's not a specific number to qualify. It's based on the number of pay periods and the number of hours you've worked logged in your activity log for that 3-month period.
What number do we have to have here? In this here,
they would not provide me with that number. There is no specific number. It's based on the number of days in a month, the number of pay periods in a year. It's.
And all this is putting, I mean, you already put this down. Whatever you put down for your hours is what you put down for your hours. We haven't modified that.
Which is interesting because in a year when you're, you know, a chair or you have different liaisons, yeah, your hours change a little bit. But
you could recertify if you need to.
Well, that's what I want to find out is who, how do you know if you need to?
Well, if you feel that the log that you filed is no longer accurate, you may redo a log for a 3-month period. At any time.
And also, that's the wrong question, because the correct question is, how do I accurately reflect the hours that I am currently working? That's all it matters. The question should not be, how many hours do I need? Because that would be then sounding like you one was working a system rather than showing work.
No. I'm asking if there's a. If there are expectations that the state has, and what do we need to be doing as legislators to meet them? That's all. Okay.
Are we ready to vote? Peter?
I remember the one time when I kept track of my hours, and they gave a number. They said, if you want to be a full-time on the pension system, you have to log, I forget, you know, how many hours a week. 30, was it? I can't remember, but something like that. Yeah. And we all logged them for 3 months, and different people had different numbers.
Yeah. Roughly, if I recall, it was about 30 hours. Yeah, but I, you know, as Kathy said, it changes. But I think that's general.
We can look into that.
Sure. But
all this is correcting the calculation because the comptroller's office requested it to be done the way they wanted it done. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Ready to vote? All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? One opposed. Duly.
All right. Yeah. Sorry. Hold on. I have my...
P. Designation of newspaper?
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I have my agenda on my tablet and it powered off here. So Resolution P, designation of newspaper, and I so move.
Is there a second? Seconded by Julie Kiefer. If I could speak to this one a little bit. This is something we do every year. We designate a newspaper, and for the last, I guess, couple of decades, it's been the Ithaca Journal. It's the only daily that we have in the county, other than the specific one that's up at Cornell for the Cornell community. But the... There's been a lot of changes over the years with the more electronic kinds of things, and I think that we need to think about, are we doing the best to reach the most people to be informed of the kind of notices that we have to publish? We are constrained by state law in what we can do. But we have a number. We have more than one weekly. We have newspapers from other counties that are distributed in Tompkins County that cover some of us down here. I think it would behoove us to have government operations take a look at this issue and find if we need a second newspaper, for example. Is there a better way to reach more people
And I think the issue becomes how do we do that? How do we let people know when we put a legal notice there that maybe it's something that affects them and something they ought to read? So I'm not saying we should not pass this resolution tonight. We have to have a newspaper that's designated. But I think we ought to take a look at this issue next year.
Are you suggesting a Facebook page?
I don't know if I'd ever suggest Facebook.
Just ask.
We may have to think about things. The world changes. So are we ready to vote on this one? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Aye. Those opposed? That's unanimous.
And then finally for my report, we have originally in December, we were going to talk about the apprenticeship program in further detail after we had received feedback from folks about the apprenticeship program back in, was it October or September? Gosh, yeah, the dates are all blurring. And unfortunately, though, we have to move that into to January in order to get attendance from some key people for that discussion. And so as a result, there are only three action items on the government operations agenda in December, and they are all not, they don't require any votes. They're just kind of for our information. So if the committee is interested, I would like to propose canceling that meeting. It is also 2 days before Christmas as well, but that's not the main reason.
You said they're action items.
I'm sorry, they're not action items. They're information okay. items, yes. All right.
So you deal with the committee yes. on that.
It sounds like yes.
But Nathan
so we will cancel.
Has any objection? Right. Sounds like you're not having a meeting.
We are not having a meeting.
Okay.
So that is all that I have to report. Of course, you know, there's and then with living wage issues, you all heard about some good news as it relates to living wage.
Do we want to report that?
Well, it's actually Kathy Lucera might want to report it. It was action that came out of her committee, though it was something that the Government Operations Committee had as a goal for our year. Yeah.
We were just talking about that. I think if it's are y'all talking about the living wage resolution?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We voted on it in facilities and infrastructure, and then we just voted on it in budget. And it looks as though it'll be coming to the legislature in January, first meeting in January. And it's I hope it's something that gets a lot of attention locally because there's a lot of work that went into it on the part of staff, legislators, and, of course, community members that really put themselves out there. And it's, I hope, the beginning of us being able to act in a way that's a lot more consistent, although we have found out in our studies that we do pay almost all our employees a living wage. We're just trying to work with contractors now. So if that's a...
I would just point out that what we're talking about here is the contractor who does solid waste for us.
Yep.
So there'll be more on this when it comes next time.
That concludes my report.
We go next to Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee. Carol Chalk is the chair.
Okay. Well, the committee will be meeting tomorrow, whatever the date is, December 17th at 12:30 at the Old Jail. Committee members, please note, everybody, note that it is at 12:30. Hopefully next year we're going to have committees where one of the questions that gets asked of people as we sign up for whether we're going to be on a committee, that times get coordinated, that people who, members of that committee, they're absolute can't meet dates, that there aren't two people on a committee whose dates don't work together. But we did get through the year with adjusting the time, so thank you all for your forbearance on that. The main item on the agenda will be Ed Marks, another planning staff, presenting much more content of the comprehensive plan. Let me just give you the sort of, it's an 11, 12 item table of contents for that, so you'll understand this is something that we won't be moving forward on the legislature until into March,
we're going to be setting the date of a public hearing tonight that I'll get into. But just so you understand, this is, and I meant to carry the actual plan with me to hold up, but it was too heavy, the hard copy of it. It's the whole thing, the set of materials is, I think, something like, oh, Dan, please hold that up, visual here. 193 pages when you count the comments that got added to it. There, you know, there's been a whole year and a half, 2 years of public meetings, but we're now at the stage, and staff has taken all that input and is still incorporating into the final versions. The December draft of that plan just got posted online yesterday. We have hard copies, and we had a link we sent around to committee members. The approach this year, if I'm going to pique your interest in coming tomorrow to hear some of them with the detail that's going to be behind this, is to have three overarching principles that we adhere to that stretch over everything else that we do. And those three overarching principles have to do with sustainability, regional cooperation, and fiscal responsibility. So that as we get into the topical areas, we address those three items for all of them. The topical areas have to do with the economy, housing, transportation, the environment, which is divided further into natural features, rural landscapes, that part of the environment, and water resources, a climate change section that addresses greenhouse gas emissions with similar goals to what we had before, and then a new climate adaptation section. So not only do we need to deal with are we reining in emissions, but how are we adapting, the kinds of road issues that we've seen, for example, or will the pipelines we have be safe underground as there's upheavals? And then neighborhood and communities section with healthy communities where the built environment promotes healthy, safe, and active lifestyles, and development patterns. And there we get into the focus areas. So these are a lot of hot topics that we deal with. So Ed and Joan and Katie will be presenting to us tomorrow these different sections, and it will be then moved forward. The resolution that I have is packet page 27, resolution Q. It is scheduling a public hearing on the update of the Tompkins County Comprehensive Plan. As this came out of committee, Ed and I were instructed to, but there was some question about the appropriate date to put in there. So on line 15 there, the appropriate date that was supposed to come with a question mark, and the appropriate date is February, it's our second February meeting, which is, I wrote down in one place February 20th and in the other one February 17th. So it's February 17th would be the appropriate. Is that our second meeting of the month? So we would have a public hearing February 17th. So that's the version that I'm moving. So please change that date.
You're moving resolution Q.
With the date of
February 17th.
There's
a second. Seconded by Dooley Kiefer. Discussion. Martha Robertson.
Would it be possible to get a presentation by Ed here, say, you know, one of the January meetings, I guess, or the February 5th meeting?
That would be a very good idea. Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Anything else on that before we vote?
Although I will caution that, you know, it's not material that lends itself to a 10-minute version, which is why I'm encouraging people to come tomorrow and hear the hour-long version. So, but yes.
Maybe not 10 minutes, maybe not
right.
An hour. Something
okay.
Between that, between those two numbers.
Ready to vote. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? That's unanimous.
Charter Review will meet again on January 7th, in which we will be looking at the sections of the Charter having to do with the Department of Social Services and the Department of Probation. Any questions I can answer? Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. We've got Nathan Chinagawa as the Vice Chair.
Yes, I have to report that there is no report, but there may be a meeting before the meeting on the 6th of January.
Any questions for Nathan? Old Library Committee has no report. We probably won't meet again until, I'm guessing, in March.
There's a resolution for budget.
No, that was already.
We already did that. We did that. It was the first thing we did.
Oh, yeah.
Kathy, could you maybe perhaps withdraw your resolution?
That's what I'd like to do.
Thank you, please. Minutes of previous meetings, we have November 10th, 2014. Someone want to move that? Dooley Kiefer, is there a second? Seconded by Peter Stein. Ready to vote on November 10th? All in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous. How about December 2nd? Someone want to move that?
Move.
Peter Stein, is there a second?
Sure.
Dan Klein, ready to vote? Dooley Kiefer.
I would request a change on packet page 34 to minutes page 3. The next to the last paragraph is my words. And it's the second sentence. In addition, she spoke of the importance of having the request for proposals document in the legislature minutes and feels very strongly about this. She said the notes have no official standing, so placing the RFP in the notes is not the same thing. And therefore, she would not support the resolution if the document is not included in the minutes. I've slightly shortened the verbiage and
any
made it
objection
clearer.
To Dooley's revision of that comment that she made?
It's her words.
All right. With that, are we ready to vote? All in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous.
No. There's more in it, but it's not my words, so I couldn't touch the rest of it.
I'm sorry, Dooley, I'm not understanding.
I corrected my words, but
right.
There are other things in there that I can't.
So you're voting no.
I'm
sorry. Okay, so there's one no. Any unfinished business? I'd just like to take a second and say it's been a great year. I've been very, very honored to stand up here this year as your chair and work with each of you, work with our employees from the very bottom right up to the top, our administrator. I've been very pleased with the way we have tried to act as a team. I think it shows. I think the comments I hear from the public is what they like what they're seeing among us. They like the diversity on this board. They like our trying to work together. They like us taking on difficult issues and trying to work through them, being calm when we have difficulties such as crowds for privilege of the floor and other things, but still trying to honor free speech and other issues like that. I think we have a lot to look back on this year, and we'll probably review it a little bit more later, but I just wanted to say thank you to each of you and to everybody who works for this county. It's the holiday season. We won't meet again until after. We're about to go into Hanukkah, certainly, and Christmas and New Year's and Kwanzaa and other days. And we want everyone to have a wonderful holiday season and to be safe. And exactly as Leslin said, be out there, have fun, but be safe. Yep. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're here.
Motion to adjourn?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. Motion to go into executive session to discuss litigation. And we expect to come out of executive session and adjourn without taking any action. Is there a motion by Martha? Is there a seconded by Mike? All in favor of executive session, please raise your hand. Those opposed? Okay. Let's let the camera shut down and we'll go into